Craig's on, and we haven't podcasted in a while, so my desk is a mess. So I'm going to sit here podcasting and staring at the mess.
All right. Well, I was wondering if this was a big round number, but it's not. It's We Were Gamers episode 399.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it is.
No.
Yeah.
How have we gotten that far?
Like, truly a mystery.
I bought a bunch of games today, so I guess that was in celebration of 400 next week.
Okay, sure. You know,
Square Enix sale.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. They say, you don't need to justify it to me. I'm.
You know what I mean?
I do know what you mean.
What's up, JJ?
Hey, man. How you been?
I'm good.
Michael is on assignment. I'm sure yes. Everyone has noticed his lack of presence.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's been a month. I think a lot of us are, I don't know about you, but just reeling from the amount of things there are to do these days.
It's a season, you know?
Yeah.
Getting into high gear.
Good point. It is a season. All things are an era now.
Oh?
You know, because of T-Swizzle.
Oh, okay.
So you just say, we're in our busy era.
Mm-hmm.
Because I
feel the New York Times crossword would have something to say about that, because it has to be a long period of time to count as an era.
For the kids.
Yeah, but like, you know, they have less total time, so maybe things comparatively feel longer.
Look, the kids are not doing the New York word cross puzzle.
Well, that's their fault, man. They should be, because
that didn't come out of my mouth right. New York word cross puzzle.
And yet, I still knew what you meant. but really, that's their loss, because it's a good crossword, you know? I've talked about it with Michael on here before, and I've been playing a lot of that crossword, you know? My streak is over 700 days at this point, I think.
Well, good for you. I can't stick with stuff that long. Every 3 months, I try to get back into, like, doing daily word things, because that are good for your brains.
Mm-hmm,
and then inevitably I get too busy and they fall off and I don't do them.
You know, it's just one of those, like, you got to do it at night. And then if you don't finish it that night, you got to do it the next morning. And then panic and do it like right before the next one comes out if you forget.
Mm-hmm.
They're pretty generous about the amount of time they give you to do it. It's not like, in theory, it's like, quote, 24 hours, quote, but it's not really. So I don't really understand their exact cutoff periods.
The good old ish.
Yeah, exactly. But I guess we're not here to talk about crosswords technically. But I was out last week. I think we all were.
Yeah, well, we all, yeah. It was busy last week.
But I was busy at Disney.
Mm.
After taking some advice from both you and Michael. And actually, I saw Michael in person. That was good.
They love the Disney over there.
Yeah.
I mean, we all love the Disney, but, you know, it's not hard to convince them to get to Disney. You know what I mean?
Right. I think we didn't convince them they were already going. We just convinced them to meet with us. Easier lift. But so that was a good time. And this is my first experience on some of those new rides in California Adventure and also Star Wars stuff.
I haven't done any Avengers since it went in. We didn't have passes after COVID. And so for people that don't know, Disneyland had a pass system. They still kind of have one. They call it a key now. And they reset every single one during the COVID shutdown. They just like said, okay, all passes are now revoked permanently. And they restructured and repriced everything. And I don't begrudge the changes. They needed to do whatever they needed to do for their new structuring of the park or whatever. But it just doesn't fit our family's needs anymore with school and everything else. So
let's be real. They raised the cost a bunch.
Yeah. Like I said, it doesn't fit my family's needs.
Yeah.
And just the Avengers stuff has been mostly since then. So I haven't seen any of it.
So, you know, they rethemed the, I don't know, was that there? The retheming of the Tower of Terror into the Avengers Guardians? Thing? Yeah. So you've done that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The Spider-Man thing is new. I did that. That was pretty fun.
Did your hands get tired?
A little bit, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But that's kind of it over there in terms of like Avengery rides and stuff. There's like some cool.
They have that whole land thing that they put in, right?
Yeah, there's space. You know, there's a buildings that's, you know, selling stuff. Food. There's a kitchen and all that stuff. We did not do any of that. We'd already eaten.
So that has been, I think, the major feedback of that. And they're going to blow out the back part of the park there and add more rides.
Yeah, I think it's a less feels like a land than a corridor right now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure that they will address it eventually. But it was cool. Like I said, I had never done any of that stuff. The Spider-Man ride was pretty cool.
Did you like that new Star Wars ride?
What to expect. Yeah, so I hadn't been on either of the Star Wars rides to this point. So
the Millennium Falcon?
I have not been to Star Wars Land even a single time.
Oh, wow. Okay, much, in my opinion, more of a stepping out of Disneyland experience.
Full agreement there. The last time we were at Disneyland, maybe you were also there.
Likely.
But it was, you had to have like pre-reservations or whatever to get into Star Wars.
That was a thing for a while.
Yeah. And so we weren't able to go. And so therefore there was no Star Wars for us, but there was only the one ride at that time. And now there are two. And we did both of them.
Smugglers does not have a huge line anymore. A lot of people
basically just walk
that one.
Basically just walk right on that anytime you wanted, felt like.
Mm-hmm.
We did go on that and it crashed while we were in it.
I mean, not it, but the machines.
Well, also maybe it. I mean, we might have flown it into a wall, but that's not.
As
you do.
My kids like to pilot, so we make sure to go with a group that understands what they're in for.
Yeah. We didn't do good in our piloting job, but then the screens just all turned off and it just stopped and sat in blackness for like 2.5 minutes.
That's not disconcerting at all, being stuck in that thing.
I mean, you know, look, there was a door. It was clear, you know, they have like little videos playing of the guy and C-3PO trying to fix it or whatever. And Chewbacca mad and
gotcha.
Like, you know, it's not like it was complete darkness, although it was complete darkness for a little bit. And then you felt the thing like move, like physically, like up and rotate. Like clearly they were spinning something around.
They were what?
Internally.
Huh. Oh, to like reset.
To unload.
Gyro.
I guess I don't know. It felt like we were physically moving left to right.
Interesting.
As though we were, you know, about an axis internally somewhere and we were being spun. That's what it felt like.
You were turning. Weird.
But, you know, we ended at a, you know, and maybe it was the gyro doing that. I don't know. The feeling is weird. We have no reference points, so it's hard to say.
Yeah.
And then the door opened and they're like, all right, get out. Like, we're gonna fix this. And then they, you know, took us downstairs. You know, we were downstairs now. And then they and then they had to take us back upstairs to go on the ride again now that they had fixed it.
Oh, man.
So that was interesting. But yeah, this was my first experience with both the Rise of the Resistance and the Mickey's Toontown Railway ride.
Oh, I haven't done that yet either.
So similar concept, actually, between those two rides.
Yes, I've heard that.
So
describe it to the people though, because it's like a
it's a thing Disney's been
quote unquote.
Well, I mean, there's no track, so yes, it is, but like there's computers controlling where the cars
are
going.
It's a computerized track, yeah,
right. So there's a line of cars, and it's not clear. I guess the thing I'm more okay. I'll start with the Rise of the Resistance ride before we talk about Mickey's. The thing that was interesting to me is how they did so much work, and Disney is usually quite good about this, in making the line like part of the experience, you know?
Yeah.
That ride is better at it than some of the others. But they did a good job at that with like a lot of their more recent rides, because they know there's going to be like long waits, and so they make the line interesting, a lot of stuff to look at, you know, stare at the like rebel guns and the flight deck uniforms and all that kind of stuff, right?
Very cool.
Yeah, very cool. And then you get up to the front and there's a briefing, and then, you know, they're like, all right, you know, recruits, join the rebellion, get on this transport ship, we're going to fly you out of here. And like, you're still in the line. Like, actually, that's what this is. You're not on the ride yet, which is very cool. Like, it was a really cool way to integrate the line with the ride, you know, and then they spin you around, and then now you're in the Imperial base, right? And so
it's the same concept, but taken to the max as, like, the Haunted Mansion, right?
Totally, totally, yeah. Yeah, you know, you go down the elevator, ooh, now everything is spooky, right?
Yeah.
Well, now you're in, you know, the Imperial land, and they tell you to go stand over there, rebel scum, and wait to be interrogated or whatever, right?
That was your acting.
You know, like, they tried.
Yeah. It was, it's been a thing that I have noticed.
Okay.
Slowly has gone, they're still trying, but it's gone downhill in terms of the effort level.
I mean, you know, they're not being paid, right, to, they're not getting paid to perform.
I just think it's an excitement thing, right?
You know? Oh, totally. I would say the, we went there, the one time we did it, we went there the very first thing in the morning, right? Like, as as they did the rope drop, we ran straight there, basically, right?
Right.
And the people were more on it at that time than when we came back later that night, because, again, the lines are similarly short when it's at, like, you know, 10 p.m. also. And we went and did it then, and it was more of a, like, get in there. Like, I don't have time for you. Just shut up. Like, but it was cool. The ride is cool. You know, again, and then you know, they quote break you out of jail, quote unquote. And you get on these cars with, you know, a little droid in front that is programmed to drive you around. And because you're in this like group of cars, it is cool to see that they split up and then go different directions. And, you know, like they're all generally going to the same place, you know, through these tracks or whatever. But, you know, this one will dart down that corridor and something will happen, and then all of them will reverse and go somewhere else. And, you know,
the dastardly Kylo Ren,
he's doing stuff, you know, closing doors and probe droids, man, and the whole thing.
Standing in exploding spaceships.
So it is cool to see, you know, and it was my first experience with that kind of a ride. I guess they have done this at other Disney parks over the years. You know, overseas, I guess.
I've heard, yeah.
But the thing, so, and then after, because this is just me, I went and, like, read a bunch of information about this system and, like, how it works and all this stuff. It's very interesting, like, to me, in the, like, how does the computer keep track of where these cars are without reference points and, like, all this stuff, right?
Oh, okay. Well, I noticed the floor was metallic.
I'm sure there are requirements that, like, they have to be able to stop it. So that people can exit or whatever. I don't have any idea how this works, you know, but it has to be some sort of like arresting feature in case something goes wrong, right?
Yeah, I was figuring there was some sort of magnetic system at work there.
So supposedly, no, there's no magnets. It's just floor. They're not. There's nothing. I mean, maybe there's like guide, you know, magnets or something underneath the ground to like keep them from going all the way off course or something. But yeah, it is supposedly a truly trackless system with computers controlling where it goes. And, you know, there's all sorts of, anyway, I don't know how exactly this, you know, the videos speculate. They don't have, like, you know, access to the technology, right?
Maybe that's where Tesla got their tech.
Well, based on how much it breaks down, I hope not. Because that is the other thing. They're fairly prone to breaking down.
That one does seem likely to be down often when I've been there.
Yeah, and the Mickey and Minnie one, too, for the similar reason, because it's the same sort of car system. So if you're using their Genie feature and you can book your passes, maybe book them for those rides because they're likely to break down and then you get a free one.
Yeah.
So that's a little tip out there. The Mickey and Minnie one is cute. It's definitely less like extreme than the Star Wars one, right? There's definitely a lot more explosions and the cars like zipping around really quick in that one. And the Mickey and Minnie one is definitely a lot more like fun times. But they do some really cute stuff there too. There's a part where, you know, you're the conceit, is that the right word?
Yeah.
The concept? Probably. I don't know. Well, anyway, both, I guess.
Getting that, but yeah.
Yeah, the ride, you know, you're sort of following Goofy on this train through Mickey and Minnie are going to the park to have a picnic or whatever, and you're taking the train with Goofy, and oh no, the Mickey's car accidentally hits the switch on the tracks, and now everything's crazy. And then you go to all a bunch of crazy places and stuff. And at one point, you end up in a like a dance room with like, I think it's Daisy Duck, and the four cars like do a little conga. Like they like, you know, she does the robot in front of there is like, all right, and a one and a two, and she starts waving her arms and the cars like move in motion with her arms and stuff. It's very cute.
A little bit like the Luigi's thing.
Totally. Yes. That's a great touch point. Yeah.
Fun.
Hilarious. And that ride is fun too, and does some similar stuff to the Rise of the Resistance stuff where the cars split up a little bit.
Are they is
not
it
quite
room,
as much as that?
Is it room based like Rise of Resistance? Is kind of like room yeah. based?
Yeah.
Okay.
Kind of go into this tableau and something happens there, and then you know, yeah. You go over the waterfall, quote unquote, and then you back into the room, it's something else now. And yeah.
I think that'll be the next kind of innovation is finding out how to figure out how to trick people into thinking you haven't left rooms all the time.
Yeah, it's you know, needing to control the entire environment around these things is going to make it tough. I gather that's part of the issue with these things is that you could never have them outside because like a leaf is going to be a problem.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So yeah, I don't know exactly how that would work, but you're right. Like the technology will continue getting better, I'm sure.
Very cool.
That was fun. All right. But I mean, no one came here to hear me talk about Disneyland, probably.
Who cares, man? I wanted to hear about Disneyland.
All right. Let's move on to other more important stuff that I've been up to. Andy, you like food?
I do.
Are you into fish tacos? I mean, this is a rhetorical question, I'm sure.
Yeah, I don't need to answer that.
Yeah. If you are ever around here, and you feel the need for like really good fish tacos. Uh-huh. In La Jolla, okay. There is this place called La Corriente. Just opened like a few months ago. We were with my wife's parents. They were celebrating their wedding anniversary. Congrats to them. Big 5-0, man. That's a lot of years.
Ooh, watch out.
Yeah. And they were like, you know, so we had dinner with them. It was a whole celebration night, a great time. And one of the things they were telling us about was this La Corriente restaurant. They'd been talking with their friends and they were like raving about how good it was. Right.
So I see octopus like, on this menu.
Yeah, dude. And so we're like, all right, well, we're going to that part of town tomorrow anyway, because we were going to go to a comedy show.
Is that a straight up crab?
It's man, you're cutting me off at the pass. Hold on. And so we go and we're like, all right, well, we'll just like go. We're going to go to the comedy show early and get dinner somewhere else. So we'll try this place. It's like down the block. We could walk there. So we did.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And we walked there and we're like, you know, there's like a small line. We sit down and we're like looking at the menu and they have a soft shell crab taco.
Yes.
It's a whole soft shell crab.
The tortilla is not as big as the crab.
Yeah, it's like they would tell you it's Tijuana style. I don't know if people know what that is. So I want to be clear, like what a Tijuana style taco means, right? It's like almost a street taco size, you know, so smaller tortilla.
Yeah, it's a pretty small tortilla. I mean,
and so the tacos themselves individually aren't huge, but then they pack them. It is like, yeah. Overflowing with stuff.
You got to get a fork and eat some of this.
No, you can do it. So,
how do you eat a soft shell crab that is fried and is larger than? First of all, I would eat this, but I know a lot of people that would be very grossed out while I ate it.
No, dude, it's so good. Oh my god,
I know, but it is literally a crab that has been deep fried.
Yes, that's exactly the point. Yes, it's so good. It isn't as thick as you think. It's not like one of those big crabs you buy at Costco or whatever, right? Like the full size, like boil this crab.
No, it's a soft shell crab. It's the stuff that goes in sushi.
No. I know. I'm explaining for the people. I know because I ate one. I'm aware.
Oh, you ate this taco?
Yes, we have. Are you going to not order this? What are you doing with your life?
I don't know. I would have to order
soft shell crab taco. Come on, you can't not.
It looks too good. I mean, it looks too fascinating. Is this ceviche tacos too?
Yeah. So their menu is mostly seafood based. They have like a few non seafood options. They have like a ribeye taco. They have a couple other. There's like a mushroom one, some cauliflower stuff.
I mean, you told me to look at a taco shop, and I don't know how to not look at the pictures as fast as I possibly can.
I hear you. But they have. You can order a whole fried fish. They have a whole octopus that you can order also. We saw someone at the table over from us get that. I would do this, but no one in my party other than me would do that. The whole octopus. It's too big. Like I said, we saw one. It's too big to eat by yourself. You can't. You got to be sharing the whole octopus. It's a big
one. Yeah.
It's a big, big guy.
I don't have anything. That's a lot of a single thing.
Just
that plate of that octopus is just rice and octopus. That's a lot.
It's big. It's a lot. And the whole fish is the same thing. It's like a big snapper on a plate. It's a big old fried fish, man. You're getting the whole thing. It's definitely a sharing snapper? Kind of situation.
Oh, yeah. Love it.
But so almost the whole menu is seafood, right? They have, you know, like ahi tostadas. They have all kinds of ceviches. We got one that had like fish and octopus and shrimp all mixed together. Really good ceviche. We really like that. And they give you like, you know, a little plate of tostadas to go with it. What were the other ones? We had that soft shell crab taco that was really good. Mm-hmm. We had just one of the base like normal fish tacos because we're like, well, we should try the base level, you know?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it was great. Like, I know you've had enough fish tacos to know like when it's heavy, that's bad. Usually you don't want that. Uh-uh. You want your fish to be like flaky and light, and this was like so good. The fish just like disappeared. It was so good.
Yeah, I can get a fish taco at most places, but I can tell usually by the place whether or not I should get it fried or not. And this does not look like a place I should get it fried.
They have ahi tacos, like with you know almost raw ahi.
Oh my!
They have a salmon, I think that's this place.
Uh-huh.
Oh, no, that was the dinner the previous night. Never mind. Ignore the salmon comment.
Sorry.
But they have, like, four different kinds of shrimp tacos that are, like, very different in terms of the construction. One of the ones had fried shrimp, right, so breaded and fried.
Mm-hmm.
And the tortillas, instead of your normal tortilla, was, like, very thin, round slices of jicama.
Oh,
and so it's kind of like a, almost like a you know a vegetable shell. Very interesting.
Yeah. I've seen that before.
Yeah, it was cool. All sorts of different sauces. They tried to. I will tell you this restaurant, I guess, is the second location of a place that exists in Tijuana.
Yeah, I was looking at the website. It's
it's all in Spanish. Straight up
in Spanish.
Yeah, we had issues with that.
No translated option.
Yeah. And consequently, all the families in there when we arrived were of various Spanish and Mexican descents. We were the only white people at the time when we got there. Some more couples came in over time, but we were the only ones there when we got there. And when they brought out the little plate, they bring out a little plate of like, here's our dips and salsas to try on stuff, you know?
Mm-hmm.
There were five slots, but only four salsas, Andrew.
No,
they did. They tried.
No,
they tried to white people me. And I was like,
they did you dirty?
And I was like, oh, okay. And no shade on this man. You know, he's doing his job. He's like, and he, you know, he explains them. He's like, oh, this one is like an avocado habanero. And we're like, oh, and he's like, no, it's not spicy. Don't worry. It's very, 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 very mild. It's just like, kind of has that just for a little flavor. It's not even spicy at all. And then this one's a chipotle mayo, no spice in that one. And then this one is like Anaheim peppers and garlic and something else. And he's like, that one's a little spicy. And it was. And I forget what the fourth one was. You can tell I don't remember, because then I was like, oh, okay. Well, like, do you have like a, they had like bottles of hot sauce on the table. I'm like, oh, okay, cool. And then, you know, he was explaining the hot one and he's like, you know, so just be careful of that one with the Anaheim peppers. I'm like, oh, okay. Well, I like hot stuff, so it'll be great. He's like, oh, you like hot stuff? I'm like, yeah, give me the spicy ones, you know? And he's like, hold on. He goes back, comes back out with a fifth one in these little, you know, like the little sauce containers, and sets it down on the thing. And it's like a deep red.
Oh, yeah.
And he's like, it has its own little spoon, you know, because all the other ones have like, there's a little shared spoon for the thing. And this one has its own spoon. He's like, just be careful with this.
Don't touch your eyes.
Yeah. And I was like, all right. And that one was quite spicy.
Like, muy caliente.
Yeah. Yeah. All amazing food.
There's a place we usually eat at around here, not regularly, but semi enough to know the foods that are there. And it's always a roll of the dice when we get there on whether or not I'm the only one eating the salsa. There's only one salsa, and it comes out at whatever temperature the chef made it at.
I know the local place by me that's like that, where it's like, how many peppers do they throw into the mix today? Well, let's see, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I do.
This past weekend, everyone was able to eat the salsa.
See, you never know.
Yeah.
But yeah, highly recommended that La Corriente in La Jolla, if you're ever around in San Diego. Very good. Kind of a pain to get to La Jolla, because, you know, it's kind of hard to reach by car. But
yeah, that was really fun. It's its own little neighborhood, which is, I think, why people like La Jolla.
Yeah, and there's like cool stuff to do there, of course. But yeah, it is just a little hard to reach. But while I was off, I mean, I don't know. I don't want to take up the entire podcast here talking about stuff that I did.
Why not? We haven't talked in 2 weeks.
Fair. I did want to cover some stuff that I caught up with. Andy, we haven't talked F1 in a while.
No, and it's been kind of a drama fest outside of the fact that Max is just still winning.
Right. You got to ignore first place, I think.
Well, even... Okay, so, like, what was it? Chinese Grand Prix was the last active Grand Prix.
Right.
It rained, and he didn't start... He started in fourth in the sprint.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And still won the sprint and the race.
Yep. Yeah, did he start on pole for the race also, or no?
I think he started on pole for the race.
I think he did, right? They did the sprint.
They re-qualified.
Right, they had a real qualifying, but it wasn't wet, and then he made pole there, yeah.
But the wet qualifying for the sprint was somewhat exciting when Haas decided to just not go out.
Who knows what is going through their heads there?
Who knows what's going... Yeah, man, it's possible in my head that Haas is not an F1 team in 5 years.
I could believe it. I could believe it.
I mean, really don't know what they're going to ever do to get out of the hole.
I don't think they ever plan to get out of the hole is the thing. Like, I think this is the conception that people have misunderstood about them as a team. And it's really unfortunate that the sport allows this is the thing that I am dismayed by. They have no real plan to ever win titles because they buy almost all their parts from Ferrari or other teams.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're not doing the development and other teams are, and you're just buying their stuff, you know, which is within the rules, to be clear, they're not doing anything illegal here. And so they make only the minimum number of things that they're required to by the rules. How are you ever going to, like, put together the whole concept to the level that is required in order to beat everyone else, right? If your stuff is almost all the same stuff that Ferrari makes, how are you ever going to beat Ferrari, right?
Do you think that's ownership because he comes from American racing where that's basically all you're supposed to do is just have the better driver because all the cars are basically the same?
Maybe if that's the case, he's foolish to have not understood how F1 works, because that's not like how the sport goes.
I mean, that's the problem Williams is having, right? That's what's bankrupting Williams, is that they can't keep up literally at all.
I mean, but at least Williams is making waves and discussions about, like, you know we suck. We're modernizing our systems. We're not using an Excel spreadsheet anymore. Like, this kind of stuff. They're saying the things that you would expect for a team that's trying to move forward.
Now, well, I mean, if you had no concept about ever winning and you just wanted to run mid-pack forever, then why fire Gunther? You know what I mean? Like,
I mean, maybe Gunther tried to big time him and was like, give me more money. And the guy's like, no, right? Yeah, who knows?
Could be.
Note that they haven't replaced, you know, when they fired Gunther, the guy they promoted was like, hey, I run the race stuff. If you guys want a guy that does the stuff that Gunther used to, you got to hire someone else, basically, right?
Yeah, I'm not going to go out for sponsors.
Right. Notably, they haven't filled that position that I'm aware of, so not clear how that's going, right?
Yeah.
And they've now lost their best performing driver currently.
Well,
with the Hulk moving to Audi next year.
I don't know. If I had to pick one for me, it'd be K-Mag. I'm just saying.
Hulk. Hey, you're allowed to play favorites. That's what sports are about, man.
Yeah, that's true.
But
Hulk just
objectively
like...
on the paper, Hulk has more points.
Yeah, 4-1.
And has for like the last 4 years, right?
Well, he didn't race 2 years ago. I don't know.
It has generally been Hulk outperforming K-Mag in the car for the last few years.
I understand.
But I'm totally with you if you want to say, like, he's a boring person to, like, do interviews. I fully agree with that. And he's not exciting to watch race. I agree with that, too. He's always just sort of like, he's there, coasting along in 10th. Like, that's just what he does.
They don't even care about Haas on... They knew when they made Drive to Survive that Gunther was going to get let go before they released the season, and they still didn't even make that big a deal out of it. They had half of an episode that was like, K-Mag and Hulk, and Hulk's back, and K-Mag and Hulk don't like each other, but now they'll work together, and they had no like puff pieces about them. They had no background on them. They had like no inter-team relationships about them. I understand there was bigger drama last year with like lots of people announcing in a couple of years where they're going, but
yeah,
yikes. Yeah, Haas is a mess. And they can't even get a car on the track for Q3 when they qualified for Q3.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's, here's the only thing I can think of, right? The only justifiable reason to do that, right? Is you get to Q3 and you're like, we won't beat any of these teams no matter what happens. We're just going to save the tires.
And it's
like, who cares? Right? Now.
I don't know, man.
That's a loser mentality. That is a loser mentality. That
absolutely is.
Totally disagree with it, right? They should have been out there, tried it, right?
Send a car out for a lap and then be like, all right, come in because it's going to rain.
Yeah. Do one. Like, see how it goes. You know? Like, do one. Like, whatever. You know,
it's
that's my assessment of the team, which is why I'm so down on them as a team, because it feels like they just have this like loser mentality of like, well, we won't win. We'll take it. We'll hoover up all these like 1 and 2 point finishes that we get luckily. And, you know, we'll come in 7th to 10th every year and be fine somehow.
It really felt like for a while there that being a Haas fan was like, oh, man, someday it's going to pan out, or like an AlphaTauri
fan. Gunther sold you the dream, right?
Or like a Williams fan, like someday it's going to pan out. None of these teams are ever going to pan out. Audi's going to come in, crush all three of them, and you're going to be talking about whether or not you're an Audi or McLaren person.
Yeah. I want to believe that Williams could turn it around on a long enough time horizon, right?
Sure. But I'll be dead.
Maybe. Maybe. But it's certainly not happening like this year or next year or with the regulation changes in 26, but maybe, you know, down the road, they could have turned it around. Right.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see, I guess.
Yeah.
But man, all the crazy driver's market stuff is the stuff that's like lighting the world on fire right now.
Well, it's pretty amazing. The sign's just gonna, hey, Sauber, what's up?
I mean,
car.
You know, that's what people are saying, that Audi gave Sainz some gigantic offer that no teams are willing to meet. Huh? But Sainz,
came out and said it.
But Helmut Marko has an interest, so you can't really like necessarily 100% believe him, right?
Man, I don't know.
He might just be saying that like Red Bull won't pay that much.
How much interest does he have now? I mean, Red Bull's losing their chief of development because of the drama behind the scenes there.
Yeah. Big loss if Newey walks, right?
It sounds like. Yeah.
And the rumor I saw today was reportedly Mercedes has offered Max Verstappen 150 million euros.
For how long?
Does it even matter at that point? That's so much money. That's way more than he's making at Red Bull. I guess if it's like a 50-year contract, it wouldn't be. But like,
yeah.
But Mercedes. I don't know, man.
I don't know if I would go to Mercedes.
Right? Yeah. When you see Hamilton bailing, you're like, I don't know about this.
Yeah, and Toto, like listening to how Toto ran Hamilton off because he wouldn't listen to him about changing the car.
Right. I'm skeptical that Mercedes is going to be at the top of the next set of regs, but they have a track record of like making really darn good engines, and they haven't been allowed to make good engines for a while. And 26 will be the first time they're allowed to do that. So,
Man. Oh, the other engine thing, the Max not having a battery during the sprint and still won the race.
What is this, man?
I don't get it. How many handicaps can you throw on the guy?
He's playing in cheat mode, you know? It's like he turned the driver AI down to, like, easy.
He's playing 200cc and everybody else is on...
Right, yeah, that's the right one. You know, he knows how to drift and avoid blue shells and everyone else doesn't.
Man.
It's just
I've heard the Formula E cars are actually going to be challenging the Formula One cars next year for better acceleration.
Yeah, that's the word on the street is those new Formula E cars are very, very fast.
Too bad.
I mean,
ten laps.
Right, that's the other issue. I think it's still the case that Formula E has a car switch.
Oh,
is that still a thing, or have they stopped doing that now?
I don't think so. I don't recall car switch still being a thing.
They did in the early years of that, which I thought was very funny. But yeah. With the electric stuff becoming more important in Formula One too, you know, it's the direction stuff is going, right? So it makes sense to be, you know, working in that direction, right? When all
the last car the engine technology is in 2018.
Okay, good. So they have to make the battery last. So you get that acceleration for like two laps.
Oh, because in, Never mind. This is why we don't do research.
Yeah.
I'm like starting to read articles. It's boring. Nobody cares.
My memory of why they did the car switch stuff was the battery technology wasn't good. And it's quite a bit better now. So I think they probably have fixed that problem. All right. I guess we could talk one more thing. I didn't talk about it yet on this podcast. We went and did falconry couple weeks ago.
Like you had a bird on you?
Yeah. So there's some place around here. I don't want to say around here because it was a pretty decent drive away. So it's not like it's like close, but it's
within some sort of castle? Was there a hunting ground nearby?
No. It was definitely up in the woods. Like on a the road is marked on GPS, but like you get there and there's like just dirt. It's not really a road. So, you know, it's that kind of a place.
I was reading the first story, Sword in the Stone, of the Once and Future King. Mm. And the amount of falconry description that is actually in the Sword in the Stone is a lot.
The Once and Future King is a great book, man.
Well, only the first part for kids, but yes.
I mean, the whole book is great, but yes, it's not all necessarily a great children's tale the whole way through.
Yeah, not so much.
So it's a company out here. I mean, I'll say we had a good experience. So Sky Falconry is the name of the company. Look them up on Instagram. And we heard about them through NPR like 500 years ago or something, it feels like, before COVID, way before COVID. And it was one of those things where, like, you know, we'd been talking about it. Like, you know, my wife mentions to me, oh, I heard about this on NPR. And I'm like, okay, that sounds like an interesting activity. We could, like, put that in the back pocket to do sometime. And I was like, okay, you know, next, when you want to go, you give me the date and we'll book it, you know? And then COVID, and we just completely forgot about that for like 4.5 years. And it came back up again. I don't know how, who remembered it or whatever. So I was like, is this company still in business? Let's see. and they are. And it's just, it's a husband and wife team who own a bunch of birds, basically. And they have, like, there are licenses for this stuff. You have to have licenses for hunting falcons.
They I don't know what they use them for all over the place, but I have hired falconers before to protect sound. So, like, a lot of, like, places,
chase other birds away.
Yeah. So a lot of places we try to shoot, there'll be like tons of crows or parrots or other things like that. And so you have a falconer on standby to chase those birds off.
Yeah. And so that, you know, they are, they have an owl too, apparently. And you know, their whole thing is that they are a, you know, they, you know, they're taking care of these birds, training them, but the birds are like here to do bird stuff. It's serious. They're not like, it's not a game to the birds. You know, this isn't like happy fun times with the birds. So you kind of have to be like, don't like wave your arms around or whatever, because the bird is going to like shoot over there and try to get you, you know?
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Serious sport.
And once, you know, and you know, they give, you know, again, part of the experience, they give you a glove and you can, you know, hold it out and the bird will come land on it and stuff. And you can't touch it, but you can, you know, look at the bird and it's right there, right next to your face, dude. It's very cool.
Yeah.
And then the bird is like, you know, as soon as the other person puts their hand up, the bird is like, bam, gone. Right. Yeah. These things move fast. And I guess they have a GPS embedded in their back somewhere, like a little hook that they can hook these detachable GPSs onto.
Oh. Okay.
So it's like, it's like a surgical thing, right? And they're like near the spine where the wings meet. It's a very tiny little like thing that they can basically clip these GPS backpacks, they were calling them, onto the bird. And then they have an app.
Lose the bird?
Yeah. And they can monitor how far the bird has flown, how fast it's gone, where it's going. So then when they like send the bird out over the mountain range, they can see where it is. And like, you know, when then we see it fly, they're like, oh, it's going to come around here and it's going to fly through this valley, right? Like that kind of stuff. And then, you know, they, when they get out the like demonstration of the bird, like doing its hunting stuff, that bird is like zipping like really fast through the, they have a stand in like separated by 4 or 5 feet between us. And the bird is like shooting in between us as we're standing in a line.
Look, man, it's alarming. We were out for a walk yesterday and we live up near some hills. So there are wild animals. There's coyote, you know, there's coyotes, there's raccoons, there's skunks, there's everything. And there's also big birds. And yesterday we were out on a walk. Yesterday? Yeah, it was yesterday. No, Friday. Doesn't matter. Anyway.
Recently.
Yeah, we were out on a walk and it startled me and the dog because there's silently, out of the corner of your eye, something just kind of bombs down towards you. And it flew straight over our heads into a tree and grabbed a little baby bird out of a nest, a little hawk. A hawk did.
Yeah. And you know, they
breakneck speed. I don't know how he didn't hit anything like branches or anything.
No, that's what they're built to do, man. They dart in and they grab and they go.
Crazy.
And they are so fast. And I guess the they give you like all this history about it, like how the sport came to be and, you know, the sport of kings and all this sort of stuff. And then how, you know, it's done in the modern times and, you know, what they do to keep the birds, because it's also like they're trying to keep the birds in shape, but also you don't want to just like fly them all the time so that they, you know, because like this is how they eat, right? You have to like, they don't just like, you can't just like hand them food. They won't be able to do this stuff if they aren't working out effectively, right? So it's very interesting to hear like all the handling and how they, you know, keep the bird, you know, healthy and fit and all this stuff. But they have to like basically, you know, if there aren't other birds around for the bird to eat, they have to basically like simulate a bird there for it to eat because they eat other birds, right? That's what they're actually adapted to do. Their whole thing is about eating other small birds.
Or very small rodents, yeah.
Yeah, they said like they will eat other like rodents and stuff, but they really do prefer like if they were just had their druthers or whatever, they would be getting little birds.
And it depends on what you want them to keep doing, right? If you want them to be hunting birds.
Of course, right.
Don't train them to hunt ground animals.
Exactly. And the the skills that they need in order to hunt birds are different than the ones you would want in order to hunt rodents and things of that nature. And the owls are like really good, they said, at like mice and stuff like that, to the point where it's like they actually have trouble getting the owl to do the stuff that the falcon will do very easily because the owl doesn't want to fly over to the person's arm that's holding the thing up over there, because it's like, this is just an arm. There's no food here. I'm like, I don't care. Like, even when they put like the little piece of food on the glove to get the owl to come over, the owl's like, do I have to?
I don't know.
Fine. It is very funny. The owl has so much more personality in like the way it moves and its facial features and stuff.
I feel like I saw relatively recently a picture of an owl where they pulled up all the feathers and you realize how long
freaky looking
owl's legs are versus their body, and you're like, ew, put it down, put it back.
Oh, be freaky.
Yeah, they look like little flamingos.
Really?
Yeah,
their legs are that long?
Yeah.
I'm not going to do that now, but very that strange. Is terrifying, actually.
Yeah, don't do it before bed.
Okay. I've been forewarned. but that was super cool. Not like outrageously expensive. You know, we were just there for a few hours and got to listen to these people talk and see some birds do some cool stuff and went on about our day. It was a good time. Recommended if people are out there.
Nice.
All right. I guess we could talk about video games on this theoretically video game related podcast.
I don't know, man. I'm tuckered out.
Yeah. So tuckered out, you can't talk about some more Balatro, Andy?
No. I've been playing too much Balatro, so I have plenty to say.
All right. Hit me. What's your highest stake? How high have you gotten?
I'm struggling to get through Purple Stake right now.
This is where I also have stopped. And not that I'm not playing Balatro. I still play some here and there. But I've kind of realized it's pretty BS at the purple level. And then there's a level above purple. Time.
Yeah, I'm having a hard time. I was trying to get that last deck.
Yeah, same. And you have to be orange to get that, right? And orange is above purple.
So two more levels.
So I think I have decided I'm going to wait for that patch.
Oh, it hasn't hit yet?
The beta branch has not hit. So you can sign up for the beta. You go into Steam and like opt into the beta and try it out.
Mm-hmm.
The purple and orange levels have completely different things now.
Oh,
at that level.
Okay. Okay.
That's when they introduced the rental and the perishable stuff.
I think you're right. I think it needs to be done. I think I need to stop until then, because I feel like I've done every deck on white stake. I've got maybe two jokers left that I could go out and try and like specifically do runs for, like the make $400 joker.
Yeah, God, that one is tough.
Or
400 is a lot.
Well, yeah, because you have to like get to ante like 11 or 12 to get it, right? You know, I don't even know a deck personally. I do not know of a deck that could get to ante 12. I would have to look up some sort of guide, especially for like that. Well, I have. Let's take that back. I have gotten two ante 12, which is one of the jokers.
Oh, okay. You've done better than me. I've never gotten to 12. I've lost on the boss of 11 a couple times, but I've never gotten to 12.
I've gotten two 12. And I've only done it through getting that voucher that resets the level back.
Yeah. All my runs that have gone super deep have used that.
getting that one again to set it back again, and then I finally beat.
Oh wow, well, doing it twice. Wow.
Yeah.
I didn't know you could do it again.
It's got a double voucher like all the other vouchers.
Oh, the one above that one. Is it just the same thing, or does it move you back two?
It moves you back another one, and it also gives you one less hand size or something like that.
Hmm. Okay. Interesting.
Yeah, so that's the one that got me to 12, but when I was playing it, there's that achievement or whatever, or unlock a Joker by hitting 100 million chips in a single hand. I was just sitting there. No, I know. I'm sitting there with like four negative Jokers. Everything is poly. Everything has molt. Everything, and I've done everything I can do. And I'm just sitting there going, I don't know what else. Unless that last deck to unlock is like 10 times better than this deck, I'm getting like 3 million a hand, and I still can't beat level 12.
I don't think it is. I think the only way to get into level 12 is to just have the most degenerate build that is like copying copies and doing some really sick like 5x molt on your 5x molt kind of stuff.
Yeah, I don't get it.
There are builds, and I don't understand how they work, but I've seen pictures of people playing Balatro where they have like 70 Jokers with like almost all of them negative, right? And then like a whole bunch. I don't know. I don't know what they do. Like some engine is producing this, right? And then they have some other thing also that is giving them a bunch of negative, like if it's planets or tarots or something, because then they have like a whole bunch of planet cards or something in their hand, most of which are negative also, which is definitely contributing to that one Joker that cares about the things in your consumable area, right?
Well, there's also the upgrade to the telescope that lets stuff in your consumable area give you 1.5x molt to that deck of hand.
It's that thing, but they have that with something that is letting them get a bunch of negative cards in that area, and I don't know how you do that.
Yeah, see, so this is the point that now I have hit. I tried out two things in Balatro, which was like, how far can I get really before I'm burnt on? It's weird to have gotten burnt on the game a little bit, but I think purple deck in the last week, I probably have spent 10 or 15 hours trying to get past purple stake. And now I'm like resetting runs one or two hands in.
Yeah, because you're like, oh, this is impossible, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, not even rounds. Like sometimes I'll get rounds in or hands in and just be like, no, not going to happen.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think it's time to take a break.
Yeah, it's time to take a break. And whenever that big patch hits, I'm going to come back and try and finish off those last couple rounds.
I did, however, based on your suggestion, try the touch screen controls on the Steam Deck.
Yeah. How is it?
I don't like two things about it. And one of them is Steam Deck related. The Steam Deck is big. And so if I'm sitting in certain positions trying to hold the deck and using the touch screen, it's my hands are in the way. So it's easier to hold it with the handles and use the controller. The other one is touch two touch related problems. One, I have accidentally discarded a hand while I was trying to switch the suit and rank button.
Yeah, they're small.
They're very tiny and they're right in the middle. They need to be readjusted for touchscreen. Descriptions. Hovering over something to give it a description to get a description for it. So like you have to touch and hold something to get the description to pop up.
Mm-hmm.
But if you roll your finger off of it, you could accidentally sell the Joker.
Sure, yeah, because now you have the little sell button up now, right?
Right.
I think I wonder if they're going to fix a lot of that stuff as they work on a mobile version, right?
Be honest, I still like the touch controls as much, if not more, than the controller controls.
Okay. So, minor gripes then.
Yeah, yeah. So, like, as all that said, if they can get it to work on a phone, an iPad would be great for it. If they can get it rearranged a little bit better for a phone and a Steam Deck to use the touchscreen without those problems. Great, because sometimes when I'm using the controller, I can't figure out where the controller is at when I have to like press left or right 5 or 6 times to figure out what happened to the
what's highlighted selection. Here. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, touchscreen controls are almost there, I would say.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, I played Balatro probably 60 hours now.
Mm-hmm.
I've gotten to the point of like, unless I just sit here spending 5 or 6 hours trying to get $400 in a run, or I start watching those people that are doing these negative tricks where they're getting like 70 jokers negative.
And even that is going to be like, you can't set that up whenever you want. You just have to get the right series.
You have to learn how to do it and then wait to see if you can, which is not going to be that much fun. So,
right. I'm with you. I've kind of like, I'll play a hand here or there, or I have found trying to play with the plasma deck to be interesting because it's just so different.
Is that the rearrange one?
It's the balance.
Yeah, right, the balance deck is a lot of fun, and you get really high scores with it.
Yeah, it's fun to mess around with that because it makes you play a little different. And, you know,
back on that gives me 100 of something. Okay.
Back on like green and red stake, you're like, the pressure is off. You know, it's like I can just kind of fool around down here.
Yeah.
So, love Balatro, man.
Yeah, but it was time anyway. It's been holding me back from playing COTC, Aiden.
Yep.
Is out.
It will not be spoilers to anyone here to learn that I have been playing Aiden. I'm into it a decent amount at this point, but I know you and Michael probably are going to play, so I'm not going to talk much about it.
I do have a question.
Mm-hmm.
I played Aiden Rising on Game Pass because I gave Michael my copy of Rising.
Mm.
There's a save transfer?
There is a save import, yeah.
Okay, well, I don't not have the option to play it. It's on the Chronicle is also on Game Pass. How important is the save thing? Should I try and bring it over to my Steam copy, or should I? I don't know what I should do here.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Exactly how important it is.
Okay.
You get some bonuses for just right off the bat for having done it.
Yeah.
None of them seem essential.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the stuff that you name comes over later, I think.
Oh.
And I'm not clear about anything beyond that, because I've only met a couple of the characters from that game in this game.
Hmm.
But my understanding is all of them are there, like including all the shopkeepers and stuff, so.
Interesting article on Microsoft.com that says that the save import is not working
well, that's a bummer.
In Xbox Game Pass.
I'm sure it is possible to fake out the save import feature in Steam to get it to detect your save, even, you know, download someone else's save and make it work or whatever.
Yeah. Did Michael didn't back it, did he? So maybe he needs a copy. I don't know.
Did he not back it? I don't know. I thought he did. He was playing Rising. But maybe not.
Well, I gave him Rising. Yeah.
Right. Maybe he just didn't back the level that got you the copy of Rising.
Or, I don't know. We'll have to ask.
Or not. I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah. Michael, when you listen to the podcast, well, now we'll know that you listened to the podcast.
Yeah. Let us know.
Yeah. Let's figure out this Aiden thing. Yeah. Is it a Steam Deck or what's up? What should I play it on?
It definitely seems like it's fine for whatever you want to play it on. It runs
controller.
It's a controller game.
It's a controller game. Okay.
Yeah. I don't even know if the touchscreen works. The thing I can say is, hey man, this is an old school game. Definitely okay. Those kinds of sensibilities.
Sweet code in for sure.
Yeah. 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 I'll let you guys play it and we can talk more about it later. I don't want to color your opinions with mine. So,
okay.
I'm enjoying my time with it so far. You know, I'm going to keep playing it. So we'll see where we all come out on it. I am curious to see how you guys think about it. But yeah, Aiden Chronicles 100 Heroes. There was a patch that came out that fixed that stupid frame rate bug that I was talking about. Did I talk about that on this podcast? Maybe not.
No, you just talked about it in the chat.
So apparently there was a bug initially in the initial release of Aiden that had the encounter rate on PC was tied to your monitor's refresh rate somehow.
This is like a Skyrim level problem of like, oh, we're at 120 frames. Now everything's broken.
Right. But like in a weird way that would be slower the higher your frame rate was.
Like or something. Less?
Yeah. Less you have less encounters the higher your frame rate was.
Oh.
Again, unclear how exactly that works.
That's strange.
And the menu has a setting for 30 and 60 FPS, but that doesn't... I guess that people are saying that it isn't really affecting the frame rate of the monitor. It's just stopping it from rendering more frames above that number. So it's kind of like VSync, really, in a way. So your monitor is still displaying 100 and whatever frames, but
yeah.
It won't ever render more than 60.
Oh.
So it's just like, oh, you want to do another frame? It's the same thing. Oh, here's the same thing. Okay, now it's new.
Frame doubling? That's weird.
It's weird. I don't understand exactly what they're doing, but it's not true, like, FPS cap. It's some kind of, like, VSync, weird VSync implementation that then plays very strangely with monitors with high refresh rates.
Huh.
Anyway, the end result of that is they have now fixed the bug that did that, and it is now just works like how you would expect. I don't know how the refresh rate stuff is working. It seems to be okay now. The previous explanation was either go in and just change your monitor's refresh rate to 60 or 30, and then it would be okay from there. Sure. You shouldn't have to do that. That's silly.
No.
They have fixed that now. So, and there was a recruitment bug for one of the heroes, and I guess that also has been fixed. Jason Schreier was apparently pretty annoyed at that. I guess they got that fixed. But yeah, Schreier himself was not too high on the game, sounds like.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
He's been on a Final Fantasy kick lately. I don't know, maybe he's...
He's the number one...
Colored glasses.
He's the number one Suikoden 2 defender online that I'm aware of, so...
Really?
He definitely really likes that game. So this should have been right up his alley. Who knows if the bugs that he hit colored his experience or something. It's hard to say, right? Can't have a first impression back, right?
Mm-hmm.
But anywho, I'm sure we'll talk about that more as time goes on here.
Yeah, well, now that we're setting Balatro down for a little bit, you know.
Yeah, we'll get some time with other stuff.
I gotta get back. I'm falling behind on COTC. Ugh.
The new dungeon is not bad, man. It's not bad.
I hit those trials where basically I was like, I'm so tired of not knowing where I'm going, that thing.
Mm-hmm.
That I just, I fell.
Are you still in there?
Harder, you know?
Are you still in there or are you at the new chapter?
No, I'm still in there because Balatro came out and it was like, well, I might as well, you know, I'll play this because I'm enjoying it versus the other thing that is giving me nightmares.
It gets better. The new chapters dungeons do still have some of that, but it's definitely a lot less annoying than the specific one that you're talking about where you're just constantly lost.
Mm-hmm.
So, but yeah, I saw the boss of the final chapter today for the first time and got stomped. So when they put out the chapter that came with a little note from the producer, you know, we hope you like the conclusion to this arc of the story, yada yada. Hey, maybe go work on your weapons or something.
How old are your weapons?
I had good weapons for the people I was using, but they weren't good. Like they weren't the weapons of the type in the zone that I was in.
Mm-hmm.
Like some of the people had fortune weapon equipped and we weren't in areas where the fortune weapon bonuses would have applied, right?
Yeah, but so for some people like Eliza, it doesn't matter. You still want a fortune weapon.
Right. Well, maybe that's not true anymore. The highest level of weapons in some of these areas is up to like 30% and 40%, and no 10% fortune weapon, I don't care how good it is going to ever beat 40%, right?
It's more about them switching their style from magic, or from like attack to magic, right? Like a sword versus a...
Sure, and you can definitely find those, you know, if you need, if a character specifically needs all those kinds of stats or whatever, it's like, you know, Yanlong is going to be bad with anything other than a fortune staff because his, he wants physical attack stats and all the other staffs don't have that, right?
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, maybe you should bring someone that isn't Yanlong to this fight, right? Like, you need the damage.
Right.
So that's the tip, I guess. It's not. And I think Michael mentioned this in our chat, but it seems like you get one each of all the new weapons in the zone if you go around and get all the treasure chests. So.
Oh, okay.
That may not be enough.
Trying to get the chests from last zone.
That may not be enough because you may need, you know, multiple swords or multiple whatevers, but at least one free one of each kind is nice. Saves you a little on the materials collecting. So. All right. Well, that was a good catching up with you, man.
Yeah, that's nice. It's nice to be back at it after a little... break there, you know. Just, sometimes things get so busy now. It's like,
yeah,
you know, what we can't stress about it.
I'm sure the people missed us. We're glad to be back, folks.
Absolutely. Thanks for waiting it out.
Yeah, and Andy, if they want to get at us, how could they do that?
podcast@wewergamers.com, or go leave a comment on YouTube. At youtube.com/@wewergamers. Those are the two best spots, especially with the podcasting world in a little bit of flux with everything getting shut down and new little spaces popping up and all that sort of stuff. So. Apparently, what's his name? Scone a Ferrari. Newey? Newey's going to Ferrari. Ferrari to go with Hamilton.
Oh, is that the new...
That's the newest rumor.
The new rumor? All right. Mm-hmm. Sure. Yeah. Whatever. Someone at the Ferrari group got mad that they haven't won in like 20 years, so...
Finally, somebody got mad.
Yeah. After they have been in third place for like 10 years, they're like, all right, fine.
Yeah.